and welcome to another episode of Popcorn Optional. This week, we, sadly, will be talking Transformers The Last Night, and I don't know how else to get around that other than we saw it, so we have to talk about it now. But joining me tonight is Jake Brown. Jake, how are you doing, bud?
I'm good, man. I can really hear the sadness in your voice.
I'm legitimately sad. I'm legitimately... I don't want to talk about this movie for a lot of reasons, which we'll get into. Trevor couldn't be with us tonight. He's on vacation in San Diego with his wife. So enjoy that, Trevor. Be happy that you didn't have to see this movie, and use this podcast as a hopefully more entertaining way of not seeing this movie. Don't go spend $10 on this movie, and instead go spend $10 on Baby Driver next weekend.
Yeah, there you go. He definitely got the better end of the bargain on this one.
He gets to go on vacation and miss out recording this episode.
Yeah.
So he gets the best of both worlds, and that's something to be envious of. But hopefully before we get to Transformers, we have a couple of fun little things to talk to before that. That'll be more entertaining than listening to us talk about how depressing this movie was. At least for me. Jake, you could come out of nowhere and be like, man, I love this movie. Michael Bay's a cinematic genius. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're going to be really surprised on my thoughts, I think.
Super clickbait title. Jake Brown loves Transformers The Last Night?
Question mark.
or exclamation mark.
Exactly.
That's the title of this episode.
Yes.
All right. So, first off, huge news broke this week that I want to talk about. It actually kind of broke, I think, Monday or Tuesday of last week, but it's still around. There's still news coming out today, and so I wanted to talk about it. And that is that Phil Lord and Chris Miller have left as directors, or actually were fired off directing the Han Solo movie, which is the next anthology Star Wars story film being put out by Lucas that's supposed to come out in May of 2018. So the movie's less than a year away. They had less than 3 weeks of filming left. They had been filming since January. And as the story goes, Lord and Miller were fired by Lucasfilm head Kathleen Kennedy over disputes that the movie was being too funny, that they were improvising too much on set, and that their style was pretty much not fitting in with the Disney view of what the Star Wars world should be. There's so many stories around this. There's so much... I mean, let's face it, half of it's gossip, half of it's, some of it may be true, some of it may not be. We're not in the meetings, we have no idea what is, but I want to talk about a couple things. But first, Jake, what are your thoughts? What did you think when you initially got this news that they were leaving?
Well, when I first heard the news, I think I, along with everyone else, I was bummed. You know, I really like Lord and Miller. In my opinion, they haven't really made a bad movie yet that we've seen, at least. Lego Movie was one of my favorite movies of that year, and I love the Jump Street films. And you know, hiring them was definitely a risk. I give Lucasfilm/Disney a lot of credit for hiring them. But at the same time, I think this is just a classic example of miscommunication and misunderstood expectations. I forget who said the quote, but basically, someone said that Kennedy hired them to bring a comedic tone, and Lord and Miller thought they were hired to make a comedy. Those are two very different things.
just by a little bit.
Yeah. And I mean, the rumors of it was like almost a Jim Carrey-esque Ace Ventura performance. If that's true, that's super weird. But I think this just kind of really reminds people that the producer is the boss on set, you know, like the director is in charge of getting the performances and carrying the narrative. But it really comes down to who's paying the bills and overseeing the studio. And that's Kathleen Kennedy. I think she made the right call if what has been said is true. But at the same time, there will always be that what if factor. But I mean, it's in good hands with Ron Howard, and I'm sure they'll get it to where it needs to be, but I'm worried. I'm definitely worried.
Yeah. So we should say that Ron Howard, who in the past couple of years has directed Rush, which is great. But he's also directed In the Heart of the Sea. He directed all of the Da Vinci Code movies. There we go. And he directed Apollo 13. He's a fantastic director. Has a little bit of experience with Lucasfilm in that he directed Lucasfilm's best movie to date, Willow. And then they brought him in to take over planned reshoots that they had done. On normal big box office films like this, studios plan for reshoots so that once they get an edited cut of the movie, they can go back in, refilm some things, and pretty much make the film as tight and as good as they can with what they have. So there's planned reshoots. Ron Howard will be taking over those. And the interesting thing is that the Directors Guild actually came out. I don't know if it was actually the Directors Guild or if it was like Hollywood Reporter or something. Somebody looked into the Directors Guild's rules. But the Directors Guild says that if a director has filmed at least 90% of the movie, they have the right to make a separate director's cut of the movie. So I think the interesting thing now is how much of this movie did they make? And if they made enough, will we possibly see a separate Lord and Miller cut of the movie from the actual Disney cut? I don't even know how that would work with Disney. There's so many things at play here.
I hadn't heard of that. That's fascinating. Does that include the reshoots? Because, I mean, apparently they're going to reshoot like half the script now.
Yeah, so my understanding of it was that it's of 90% of principal photography.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, if you do the math of like when they started filming to now, it doesn't really equal 90, but I mean, it depends on like how much they... There's so many things at play here, and there's so many things still coming out. Like today it came out that... a little bit ago it came out that Alden Ehrenreich, who's playing Han Solo, was one of the initial people that voiced frustration over Lord and Miller to Kathleen Kennedy, and that he felt like his performance was too comedic and that they were improvising too much and it wasn't going well, along with Lawrence Kasdan, who is a vet at Lucasfilm. I mean, he wrote Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, and he wrote Force Awakens, and he wrote this movie with his son, John Kasdan. He was an initial person who Lord and Miller had huge problems with. But that Ehrenreich, actually, because of the problems he was having, Disney had to hire him an acting coach to try and get his role less comedic because of how far off spectrum it had gotten. So that blows my mind. I mean, Alden Ehrenreich, in my head, is one of the top up-and-coming actors, and so I think the fact that he voiced... I mean, you think of, at least for me, I see Lord Miller, and I'm like, these guys seem pretty cool. Like, they seem like guys who on set, like, would be fun to be around and fun to work for, but if he's coming in and being like, hey, this just isn't working, you know that that's... One, the directors have then lost the respect of their actors, and that's a huge deal. And so something had to be going terribly wrong. Like, I would love to see a documentary about the behind the scenes of this movie, because it has to be fascinating what is going on behind the scenes right now.
Yeah, I think a big thing is they were just the wrong directors for the film. As much as...
Which is sad.
Yeah, I mean, like as much as we would have loved to have them direct the Lord Miller Han Solo movie, if you look at the success they've had in the past, it's with random unknown properties, and they actually work kind of in the Pixar method where it's like, just throw ideas out. There's no such thing as a bad idea. Let's try this. Oh, yeah. We failed. Whatever. Let's just restart. And when you're working with a property like Star Wars, you don't have that wiggle room. You know, these are characters that are like people's heart and soul for 40 years. And so,
and especially Han Solo, like,
yeah,
with how little backstory we have on him, he's been such a character, at least for a lot of people, who they've projected their own ideas onto him. And so you have to be careful when you take a character like that, who is not necessarily an everyman, but he's not the Jedi. He's not the romantic lead. He's not the villain. He's, like, for a lot of senses, Han Solo is the everyman in the Star Wars universe outside of, you know, where Luke started. But where Luke ends, he's not the everyman. But, I mean, so a lot of people project their ideas onto Han Solo. And I was initially way, like, as a huge Star Wars fan, I was initially very against this movie. Because it didn't make sense. Lord and Miller came on and I was pumped. But, yeah, Jake, you're right. The movies they've done, I mean, let's think about it. Who really would care if 21 Jump Street, the Lego movie, or Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs failed? Like, those are movies that are like, if they work, great, huge success. If they don't, It's not like it's Star Wars and you ruined one of the most beloved characters of all time.
Well, I was actually watching a like an hour long BAFTA Masters of Screenwriting talk by Lord and Miller. And they were talking about making Cloudy Have a Chance with Meatballs, and they like wrote it originally and were directing it, got fired. Someone else came on, and then that person got fired. And so they rehired Lord and Miller because they were like, we have too much money invested in this movie, so just make something with the existing assets. And so,
wow.
Yeah. And like, it's amazing that they made what they made with what they had to work with, because Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is a really fun movie. But
yeah,
I just think, I don't know. They're very talented and really funny. But I just, like I said, this is not, their working style does not fit in this universe.
No, not at all. No. And that's the unfortunate thing, is that they were one of the few reasons I was excited about this, but the more I think about it, the more that it is a good move for Disney to make. And I can't think of another movie where a director has been publicly fired when 80-90% of filming has been done. Like, that blows my mind. I mean, you heard about troubles behind Rogue One where Tony Gilroy came in and filmed reshoots because they didn't trust Gareth Edwards, or the story is that he was stuck in editing, and so Tony Gilroy filmed while he edited. I mean, it seems like the exact same situation where Disney hires these indie filmmakers to come in, make these movies, realizes the movies they've hired them to make isn't necessarily the movie they want, and then brings in a veteran director to kind of close it out.
Yeah.
Hopefully this gives them, I mean, so the thing that this leads me to then is, okay, why, what does Colin Trevorrow have in his bag that Disney is going, you know, after Jurassic World was meh and Book of Henry was a bomb, what does he have that they're keeping him on episode 9?
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, like, if they let him go after the troubles with Rogue One and now the Han Solo film, especially with it being one of the episodes.
Yeah, and especially with it being the closing of this new trilogy. Like,
yeah.
How? There's no way that that movie can tank. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
You have to have that movie go out on a good note. And if that movie, because the idea for the longest time, or at least the rumored idea, was that they would do three trilogy films and then do a series of spin-off films, and then in like 6 or 7 years come back and do another episode after giving it time and giving the characters time to mature. So if you're going to have that be one of the last episodes of the so-called Skywalker saga, you better know for a fact that you are leaving it in good hands. And I mean, Safety Not Guaranteed is a fantastic film. Jurassic World has its moments, and supposedly Book of Henry is just awful, but I mean, look at the guys that they've gotten to do 7 and 9. You got J.J. Abrams, who's one of the biggest directors nowadays. You've got Rian Johnson, who, between Looper, even Brothers Bloom is great.
Oh, he's Brick, fantastic. I trust what he's
amazing.
Doing.
Yeah, and they love him. He's come out and said, I have full creative freedom over this movie, like, the movie that you guys are seeing is my movie that I've written, that I've directed, that I've cut, that I've edited. Like, he is assuring fans that they're seeing his movie, which is good. But yeah, so many questions now with the Star Wars universe. And I think the funny thing is, what movie do we end up getting with Han Solo? Like, how much of are the good things? Oh, wow. Look how Ron Howard came in and saved this movie. Or is it, oh, look at those funny moments. Those are really good. I wish we had more of those, and more of those Phil Lord and Chris Miller moments. So,
yeah.
I don't know where to go from here. That's what it is. But that movie will be coming out in May of 2018. At least as of now, there's no idea whether or not they push it back or not. But I mean, it comes, yeah. So they have less than a year to finish that, which, I have no doubt that they can finish it, but the quality of it will be interesting to see how it turns out.
Yeah.
But the next thing that we want to talk about is, well, actually, there's two things we could talk about. Do you want to talk about trailers first, or do you want to talk about the other thing that we're going to talk about?
Whatever.
Because the other thing, okay, so there's two trailers that played in front of my movie, and Jake, I don't even know if you saw these, but I know that you've seen one of them. I don't know if you saw the other one. So one trailer that played in front of my movie that I really wanted to talk about was Logan Lucky, which is the new Steven Soderbergh film with Channing Tatum, Adam Driver, Riley Keough, Daniel Craig. Gosh, there's so many people in that movie. Did you have that trailer in front of your movie?
I didn't have it, but I've seen it, and I can't wait. Super in.
Super in. That movie looks fantastic. If you haven't seen the trailer, it's Daniel Craig is looking to be his best character since starting the Bond series. Channing Tatum's fantastic. Adam Driver looks hysterical. It's the way that Soderbergh described it is imagine Ocean's 11, which he directed. Imagine Ocean's 11, but everything that goes right for the Ocean's 11 cast is everything that's dysfunctional with the Logan Lucky cast. It's a heist set at a NASCAR race, which is just sounds amazing and something like only Steven Soderbergh could pull off.
For real.
Yeah. And then the other one that played in front of mine, which I hadn't seen online and I was kind of shocked about, was a movie called Stronger, which stars Jake Gyllenhaal as a survivor of the Boston Marathon.
Yeah.
Did you see that one?
I saw it online a couple days ago.
What'd you think?
Jake Gyllenhaal looks good.
Which he does always.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I didn't see Patriots Day, which this is basically what that is, kind of in a different way.
Well, I feel like I haven't seen Patriots Day either, but I feel like Patriots Day is more of a story of the whole series, whereas this is more of a story of the recovery.
Yeah.
From what happened. So I think they center around the same event, but at least to me, they feel very different. Maybe one of them is the fact that it's Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg, and the other it's that it's, I don't know who directed Stronger, but Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. I mean, it's about the Boston bombing, marathon, same story, all that stuff, and it's like a year apart from Patriots Day. So, I don't know. It looks good. It looks like it's going to be one of those, you know, classic tearjerker, underdog, rah-rah, America, good performance movies. So, yeah.
Scale of one to Leo, how bad does Jake Gyllenhaal want an Oscar?
I don't think he's at Leo yet, but he's getting there.
I think the second that we see him grunting through an entire scene, then we know he's at full Leo.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess he's not. Oh, gosh, he's so good in so many things. The fact that he doesn't have an Oscar yet blows my mind. I mean, between Prisoners, Nightcrawler was fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say,
he's amazing.
He deserves one. I mean, if he keeps picking the right roles, he'll get one in a few years. He kind of seems to have like a little bit of John Krasinski in him, in that like he picks projects that you're like, oh man, great pick, and then it turns out to not be very good. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Gosh, John Krasinski,
poor guy. He can't win.
I don't know of a guy that I root for harder than John Krasinski. Like, he's somebody who, if I have my list of people that will bring me into the theater no matter what, he's on that list, but every time I go in and I'm like, okay, I know this probably isn't going to be good.
Yeah.
But it's John Krasinski.
I mean, he's getting those Office residual checks, and he's got Emily Blunt, so he's doing okay.
Yes. His wife's a huge star, so he's just going to chill at home.
Exactly.
Gosh, but what is he had? I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal, some of the movies he's had recently, Life, Nocturnal Animals, Everest, Southpaw, Nightcrawler, Enemy, Prisoners. He's worked with Denny Villeneuve twice, End of Watch with David Ayer, Source Code with, I mean, his last 6 years of films are insane.
Yeah.
But then after 6 years, you get to Prince of Persia and you're like,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
He's got about a 50-50 hit and miss rate right now, which in Hollywood, that's pretty good.
Yeah. When you think about most movies that people have coming out, I'll take a 50% hit rate.
Yeah.
That's pretty
good. He's batting 500. So, I mean, that's MVP status.
If you bat 500, you're doing pretty good.
Exactly.
Unless you're Daniel Day-Lewis, which is another subject that we weren't planning on talking about, but Daniel Day-Lewis is retiring.
I think it's a sham.
Sad.
I think he's researching his next role of a retired actor that's washed up. I'm serious.
Do you think he's going full Joaquin Phoenix and trying to make like a biopic about it?
I think so. Or maybe like there's going to be like a Birdman style movie, like a washed up actor that's trying to get into theater. And so he's going to retire, then he'll be on Broadway in like a year, and everyone's like, whoa, he's back. And he's like, no, I'm not. My name isn't even Daniel Day-Lewis anymore, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, luckily, he has one more movie coming out. He has Phantom Thread with P.T. Anderson coming out at the end of this year, which looks... I haven't seen anything from it, but it's P.T. Anderson and Daniel Day-Lewis, which last time they did a movie together was There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
So, I mean... Small little film.
Pretty good. Just pretty good.
Pretty good.
I think...
It's amazing to me the amount of films... Like, if you look at his filmography, he hasn't been in more than, like maybe 20 films, but the amount of times that he's been nominated for a best actor or like won a best actor is insane. Like he just,
I think he's crazy.
I mean, this guy knows, like, how to pick movies.
I think he doesn't have a personality anymore. Like doesn't have an accent. He's just like this walking void of a body, just waiting to like steal people's souls and act.
Do you think he's Robert Downey Jr.'s character from Tropic Thunder?
Yeah, 100%. Like, he kind of freaks me out.
Like, if you saw him in a dark alley, if you saw him and John Cena in an alley, who do you walk towards?
Not Daniel Day-Lewis, because he's like a dementor and it's going to suck my soul out and then live my life.
Oh, goodness. Daniel Day-Lewis, you are a fantastic actor. If you're one of the few people who, you know, listen to us, and by few, I
first
mean,
off,
like, amazing. 100 more than
what
zero.
Are you doing here? Like,
yeah. Also, hello. We would love to interview you on an episode. But if you're listening to this, just know that we love you and that you're a fantastic actor and that we wish that you weren't retiring, quote unquote.
And you're a little creepy.
Jake's afraid of you, but I'll take a hit for the team and I'll sit down and have lunch with you and learn how to cobble shoes as you do.
There you go.
All right, so before we talk about Transformers, which if the audience is wondering, yes, we are 20 minutes into this, and yes, we are delaying as much as possible before talking about this movie so that we can hit our hour time mark without talking about Transformers as much as possible, because we don't want to waste our time and we don't want to waste your time. But the other thing that we want to talk about does have something to do with the Transformers series, in that there's this insane trend, not insane, logical trend.
It's pretty logical. But
it's pretty logical, but it's insane in that it's come to this and that this is where Hollywood is nowadays, is that the globalization of Hollywood and how studios nowadays are looking for every single way to cash in on foreign markets. And the big reason that this comes up is because Transformers 4 had a pretty big portion of its budget paid for by the Chinese government for filming a majority of the movie in China, which I believe Jake, you haven't seen Transformers 4, have you?
I have not.
Lucky man. If you see the whole movie, you know that there's no point whatsoever for the movie going to China. It literally could have been held or filmed in Antarctica or Chile or anywhere, and it would have been the exact same thing. But China put up a bunch of money, and these movies are huge in China, and so the studio decided that a smart idea would be to involve China in this projection. So, Jake, how do you feel about this globalization of Hollywood films to foreign markets?
Yeah, well, there's actually been like some talk in the last couple months that there's like going to be a slowdown with the China-Hollywood partnership, because apparently there's some trouble with the Chinese government allowing money to leave the country to be invested in American films. But I mean, if money's involved, I think both parties are going to try and come to an agreement. And I think they're going to try and focus more on co-collaboration. But anyways, Made in China now is like enough of a marketing scheme to draw major crowds to the theaters in China. And like you said, it's insane, but it's totally logical. There's $1.3 billion people in China. Like, it's a gold mine that's just starting to be mined. And I think Fast 8 made $400 million alone in China. So it's dumb for Hollywood to not make things in China. But people are literally changing their stories and scripts to make characters go to China so they can make more money and hopefully like get a bigger budget. And it's
now you see me too.
Yeah. And it's severely hurting the quality of films. Like, we've said it over and over, just make a good movie. Like, if you make a good movie, people will watch it. And if you make a good movie set in China, more people will watch it. Like, just have a reason for what your characters are doing. Another thing is, like, another reason that things are happening in China is Chinese businesses like Alibaba, China's Amazon, essentially, is getting into the content creation game and investing and all that stuff. So, I mean, China's a huge revenue stream, cash stream, and eyeball stream. And, I mean, I think it's going to be a trend that we continue to see. I just hope that studios can start making good movies and also make money. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that for the first time in a long time, the film that's the highest grossing film domestically is not the highest grossing film internationally. Avatar has the highest grossing film of all time internationally, but Star Wars The Force Awakens is the highest grossing film domestically. And that's because Star Wars, believe it or not, is actually not a huge franchise over in China. And if you look at the numbers of Star Wars and Avatar in China, Star Wars is hundreds of millions of dollars below China. I mean, when Avatar came out in China, that movie killed. And there are even movies that are getting sequels because of the Asian market in movies like Pacific Rim. Like, Pacific Rim didn't do great in the United States, unfortunately, but it killed overseas. And so that's the reason why Pacific Rim has a sequel coming out, is because of the foreign market. And because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, other countries agreed to finance part of the movie if the movie was filmed there. So I think it's interesting that part of Hollywood's decision as far as what movies get sequels now is also based around what series are doing well overseas. Jake, like you said, Fast and the Furious kills it overseas, which cracks me up that series is so huge overseas. I love it. I'm great for it. But if I was to pick a series that would do great overseas, that would not be it. Because if I could think of a series that's American action as American action can get, it's that series of just like big car, stupid scenes of dialogue and weird, like cheesy comedy, but we're family.
Well, like, that's like what China loves, man. And I don't mean to sound like stereotypical or racist or whatever, but like if you look at the market trends, like they love that stereotypical Western big blockbuster stuff on the screen. They love the big action movies. They love the fast ridiculousness. They love the Pacific Rim. They love the Transformers. The bigger, the louder, the badder. The better it is.
I like that there's a lot of "the" in front of the things. They love the Pacific Rim. They love.
Yeah. So, I mean, they eat that stuff up over there. They really do. And if you look at like Warcraft, that movie was made for China.
Yes.
It wasn't even like, they knew it was going to bomb in America and they didn't even care. They still made it and it killed in China.
Yeah. And the same with movies like The Mummy. Like The Mummy tanked in the U.S., because Tom Cruise is in it, it did well overseas. And that's reasons why like the pirate series still does well, is because star power still has a play in foreign markets. Like in the US, just because you have a huge star doesn't mean your movie's gonna do as well as it used to. Like back in the 90s, if you had a huge star in your movie, guaranteed millions, guaranteed to do well. Nowadays, not so much. It's really word of mouth that's gonna bring people into a movie, but in foreign markets, huge stars still play great, which is why Fast and the Furious does well, in that they have The Rock and Vin Diesel, and it's why Pirates still does decent, because they have Johnny Depp, and The Mummy does great, because it has Tom Cruise. Like, it's interesting, because I heard this thing the other day, that The Mummy is projected to lose Universal, like, $90 to $100 million, but I'm looking at the numbers right now, and it's made $343 million overseas on a $125 million budget.
Wow. That's crazy.
So, I mean, even if you do production times two with marketing at $250, it's still making $100 million.
Yeah. One of my favorite things about, like, how much China and Japan love, like, white, especially white, but just American superstars is when you watch commercials for stuff in Japan or China, and it's like, that's Hugh Jackman. Like, what? And he's like doing this weird dance and song, or it's like Kevin Spacey or Alec Baldwin. Like, they love movie stars over there.
Really?
Oh my gosh.
I had never heard of that with like commercials and stuff.
If you Google like movie stars, China commercials, like you will find some crazy funny stuff.
Wow. I had not heard that. That's pretty interesting. That makes a lot more sense when it comes to Zoolander.
Yeah.
So
that's my recommend for the week.
Is Zoolander Zoolander 1 or Zoolander 2?
The YouTube commercials.
Oh, okay. The YouTube commercials. There we go. Alrighty. Well, should we get to Transformers?
Yeah, hold on. Let me take a couple shots really quick. Okay.
Okay.
And we're good.
Let's do it. And here we go. Okay. So let me just start off by saying I think the reason we're doing this and not a throwback or series episode is because I thought it'd be really funny to get Jake's reaction to this movie. And I actually paid for his movie ticket because I thought it would be so funny. And then I realized I had to go see it.
Joke's on you, my friend.
I regretted that move about an hour into this movie. I was like, what did I do? Jake, I think we saw it at the same time. I thought about sending you a text saying like, hey, do you want to bail out on this and do something different?
Dude, because I almost walked out.
Like even on movies, like out of all the movies we've seen so far, I have yet to even think about walking out. Even on like King Arthur or Pirates of the Caribbean, I'll at least watch the movie. This movie, there are so, I checked my watch probably every 15 minutes over the last hour of the movie, just waiting and knowing that it was 2.5 hours, which is the shortest of the Transformers movies, but knowing that it's like, oh my gosh, I still have an hour. How is this movie still going to milk an hour out of what they have going on screen? I don't understand this.
Yeah.
It's
so long. Like, how is it this long?
Why?
Nothing happens.
Why? Nothing, literally no scenes tie into each other one after the other. There's no point to any set piece to the next set piece. Every set piece is pretty much, you could cut it out, kick off the beginning of the next set piece, and you would be fine. You don't need to know anything else that's going on. It literally makes perfect, like, not perfect sense, because the movie doesn't make sense, but you can literally watch any scene. And this sounds like it could be a good thing, but you could literally watch any scene by itself and not need anything because the rest of the movie before it is just pointless.
Yeah. There like might be a good movie in here if you cut it down by like an hour.
Well, so that's actually what I want to talk about is I think that I originally was going to start off my review by saying, I literally had this written down. I try and be positive about movies because ultimately like, and we've talked about this before. I want to love every movie I go into. I can't think of a movie I've ever walked into and been like, man, I really hope I hate this movie. Even this, I'm like, I walk into it and I'm like, I want to like this movie. Like there are parts of it in the trailers that I'm like, that could be interesting. Like that looks like an interesting way to do this. But there was honestly nothing I liked about this movie. Walking out of it, that was my thing, was I was like, there's nothing I like about this movie. A couple days removed from it, I think there's a movie in here that they could make that I would be interested in. But I don't think that with Michael Bay directing that we would ever get that movie.
Yeah, this is the most Michael Bay movie ever. And depending on who you are, like that's either...
More than Pain and Gain?
Dang it. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, because it's about explosions.
I mean,
about
Pain and Gain just has that like bro element.
Yeah, but this is about explosions and robots and militaries. Hoorah, America's amazing. Everybody else sucks. And that's like Michael Bay's bread and butter. So this is his most Bay movie ever. And depending on who you are, that's either good or bad. For me, it's horrible. And I'm convinced that Michael Bay is actually living the plot of the movie Big, but instead of being like a kid that turns into a toy executive, he's like a horny teenager that turns into a film director.
Is that because of the women that he casts in the movie?
Dude, like, okay, so here's a question. How much does Michael Bay hate women, black people, and Asian people?
I think just non-white men would be a better way to start out. I mean, the amount of racist robots that are in this movie and the way that women are constantly sexualized, even the lead of this movie, who is a professor, right, ends up being super sexualized to the point where she has to make a joke, or like Mark Wahlberg makes a joke about what she's wearing looks like a stripper, pretty much. Like, why is that?
Yeah.
Who's in the writing room like, hey guys, this joke is going to kill? And I guess that's maybe guys are the only ones that see these guys who love cars, and so they think that would be funny.
Dude, my theater was filled with families, like kids and families, and it
if you had to give me a percent, like, how packed was your theater?
I'd say like
50%,
70% maybe.
Seriously?
Yeah, dude. Granted, okay, so I go to a theater that's like kind of far away, and it's by a military base because they have matinee prices like that go pretty much all day. So I'm pretty sure I was like with the target audience for this film, because at the end, my theater broke into applause and then a Trump rally started. So, that's not true, but they did clap. So yeah.
Okay. Let me just go ahead and say this, because to talk about this movie at all is going to be to spoil things. And I'm just going to get this out of the way. We're going to spoil this movie. Not for the reason of we just want to talk about the exciting parts at the end of this movie, but because I don't want anybody to see this movie. And if I can save you $10 by giving you a more entertaining podcast than what was put on screen, then my job will be done and I'll have saved you money. And if you want to, you can Venmo that money to me and it'll pay for me to, I don't know, convince these guys to see another bad movie sometime down the road.
But another way to spoil this movie is just watch any of the other Transformers movies, because somehow Michael Bay and Paramount and company have made the same movie 5 times.
Are you ready for me to read the IMDb synopsis? I was waiting for this.
Please.
Okay, ready?
Please.
Autobots and Decepticons are at war. Movies 1 through 4, right?
Yep.
With humans on the sidelines. Movies 1 through 4.
Yep.
Optimus Prime is gone. Okay, he dies in Revenge of the Fallen, so that's movie 2 right there. The key to saving our lives lies buried in the secrets of the past, in the hidden history of Transformers on Earth. Literally movies 1 through 4. Movie 1, they go to Antarctica, and there's history with us discovering things in Antarctica. Movie 2, pyramids. The pyramids were built to some sort of world machine thing. Number 3, space landing on the moon. I said space landing. Now I sound like an idiot. Moon landing, space travel. Number 4, dinosaurs. Literally every single movie is about history. And then this movie does 2. It does King Arthur and it does World War II. And it claims that there was a watch that killed Hitler during World War II.
Yep. I mean, just... this movie, literally the opening shot is an explosion in the Dark Ages, which pretty much just like sums up this movie. I don't even think like black powder was invented by that point.
So here's how I imagine this going on. Somebody's in the writer's room, because if you guys don't know, Transformers has this huge writing team just working on, what is it, the next 12 to 15 years of Transformers films, because that's apparently something that we need. I imagine the people in there being like, okay, so let's open up on a, I don't know, like medieval times with like King Arthur. Michael Bay sits in the corner and just goes, yeah, we're going to need explosions. And then there, somebody pipes up in the room and goes, sir, I don't think there were explosions back in those ages. No, we're going to do explosions. That's how we do this. Okay. Explosions, medieval times. Let's go.
Takes a shot of protein shake, puts on his sunglasses, and they're rolling. Yeah.
They rolling.
What?
Goodness.
So I don't know if I'm crazy, but like, I kind of like the idea of like, what if what we think is magic is actually technology from aliens, and it kind of determined the future of world powers and why Britain is like so technologically advanced, blah, 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 all that. Like, kind of an interesting idea. Like, what if Merlin actually just got powers from aliens? And then
interesting idea.
And then Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch and Professor Stripper Dress show up. And also, like, the whole Dark Ages scene is horrible.
Drunk, yeah, the Stanley Tucci.
Yeah, the Dark Ages scene is horrible.
Yeah, like, why Stanley Tucci? He was in the fourth movie as like a bad human guy, right?
I can't believe he's in. I mean, he's any of these.
How is he in this? He's in this movie and he plays a drunk version of Merlin.
Yeah,
who doesn't have magic at all, but somehow with a magical staff is able to summon a dragon whose name is Dragonstorm, although I don't think that's ever listed in the movie. I think that was something I found out through IMDb.
He's like a combination of the Knights Transformers, like they all combine to make the dragon or something.
How many of them combined?
12?
Because they say a number. 12. Do you ever see 12 knights?
Okay, so that's a question. What is this movie about? Like, what's the staff do? I don't understand what's
okay, so here's what I think this movie is about. Autobots and Decepticons are at war with humans on the sidelines while Optimus Prime is gone. The key to saving our future lies buried in the secrets of the past and hidden in the history of Transformers on Earth. That's what this movie is about.
Oh, okay. Cool. I'm tracking. I'm with you now.
Okay. So you're good now. Yeah. So we open King Arthur and Merlin, drunk Stanley Tucci, summoning Dragonstorm to roll around and fight a bunch of
barbarians.
Thank you. And that's how King Arthur gets his nobility, is that, you know, Merlin summons something and Arthur just stands there and, you know, is like, oh, Merlin will, he'll be here. Cut to a scene of him on this really cool looking path, but stopping to take a drink and then just riding through cliffs to an alien ship buried in the mountains. That's how this movie starts.
Yeah, it's weird. And I don't,
so
like, I don't know what to, I don't know.
So how do you want to do this? Do you want to go through this? Do you want me to like read through like part of the plot and we can talk through it as we go? Or do you just want
to
rant?
I think we can just rant. There's not enough substance here to go from plot to plot, plot point to plot point.
I will say this. So I tried something new in this movie. I was worried that me taking notes during movies was getting in the way of me being sucked into movies and being able to fully enjoy them. And then I started watching this movie, and about 10 minutes in, I was trying to find a notepad because I just needed to write so many things down and I didn't have anything. So what I ended up doing was going back and reading the description on IMDb, where they have the plot synopsis of the entire movie from beginning to end. And I think there's more details in here. I think I had a better understanding of the movie just by reading this. So if anybody out there really wants to go see this movie, go to IMDb, read the plot synopsis, watch a couple trailers, and I don't know, watch one of the last four movies, and then just imagine the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And then you have this movie. Don't waste $10.
What frustrates me is like, so I've only seen like two of the other movies, maybe three. I don't know. But I do know that every,
because they're all the same.
Yes, I do know that every film finishes with Optimus Prime. Yeah, with Optimus Prime giving some stupid, vague VO speech about how Earth and Autobots are partners and how we have to learn to live together. And we've done this four times. What are we doing? Like, what the heck are we doing?
Yeah. Jake, I wish I could give you an answer to that. I really do.
Also, another question. I'm just going to list questions.
Who's seeing this movie? Like, that's my thing, is like, who's the audience? I don't get...
Dude.
how this movie's making $1 billion per movie.
Just plays on loops at Trump rallies. Like, I'm telling you, that's the audience. And China. Trump rallies in China, man. China.
There we go.
Another question.
All right, give me.
How do you make Tony Hale this bad?
How do you make John Turturro this bad?
This cast. Like, this is a...
Anthony Hopkins.
This is an amazing
Sir
cast.
Anthony Hopkins.
How do you make them this bad?
I don't know. Like, I literally have a list. So, as I was writing things down when I came home going through my notes, I had a section that was just characters. And I realized after about the 15th character that there are way too many people in this movie. Like, you have Marky Mark.
Well, Cade Yeager is just such a strong character. He stands on his own, you know? He's just a bat. He needs his own standalone film, his own franchise.
What if that's the way they go with this? Like, it's just an all Cade Yeager film of him trying to, like, reconnect with his daughter. Zero Transformers in it, but it's still, like, Transformers. Cade Yeager.
Yep.
Like, that's the next movie that we get.
It would maybe be a better
movie.
And it's
like a dramatic.
It would be like Jack Reacher maybe. Or something.
Then we have Anthony Hopkins, who seems to be having fun, but comes off like really annoying.
He's not bad.
You have John Turturro.
Like, Anthony Hopkins isn't
bad. He's not
bad.
Yeah. He's by far, if we're categorizing things that are in the higher part of this movie, Anthony Hopkins is up there. Tony Hale is the guy who's a scientist who is giving out logical explanations to things, and then is the guy who is looked at as an idiot because he's using logic to go, this has happened, let's do this. And they're all like, no, just wait, Optimus will come. And it's like, okay, that's great. In the meantime, all this is happening, and we have the power to stop it. Let's do this. But he's looked at as an idiot.
Well, there was a joke earlier, too, with like, Mark Wahlberg making fun of Professor Lady about her education, and she was like, are you intimidated
Laura
by an education?
Haddock, whose name
blah,
is Vivian?
Blah. It's like Michael Bay hates educated people or something. Throw that on the list.
Yeah.
He's racist and educationalist too.
Educationalist. John Turturro John Turturro is a fantastic actor. He's amazing. Literally has scenes with no other character on screen. Literally just is giving information in from Cuba the entire movie. Okay, let's move on. Josh Duhamel. Duhamel. Duhamel.
Duhamel.
Whatever his name is.
Josh Duhamel.
Duhamel. Has nothing else to do, so I get why he's in this movie.
Yeah, get those checks, man.
Laura Haddock, who plays Vivian, is okay, but once again, her character is...
eye candy.
Yes. Like, she's Megan Fox, Rosie Huntington-Wheatley. She's not given much to... like, she is literally given things to do and is still looked at as eye candy in the movie. Like, she's the key to the end of this movie and is still not the main character or not the focal point of the story.
Yeah.
Then we get to Optimus Prime, who goes bad for 2 seconds, is renamed to Nemesis Prime, but then we go full Batman versus Superman, and as soon as Bumblebee can talk, out of nowhere, by the way, he can just randomly start talking in his normal voice, brings Optimus back from the end of his crazy evil spell. I mean, literally goes full Batman versus Superman. He goes, you are always the coolest. And then it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not a bad guy.
If your main character is going to go bad, like, at least let it last 30 minutes.
Yeah. Getting on, Megatron dies in every single movie and somehow manages to escape or come back. There's also literally a scene, the intro scene with Megatron, where he literally just shoots fire out of his cannon so that there can be fire in a scene.
Yep.
Then Bumblebee, his whole voice thing, the eye roll of that. Bumblebee actually has a cool scene where he like breaks apart and then comes back together early on in the movie. That was a scene that I was like, that's kind of cool. Huh. I could be into that. That was a good little piece. Where are Grimlock and all the other dinosaurs? Grimlock shows up in the beginning and then is nowhere to be seen in the end of the movie. You think a giant T-Rex would probably come in handy in facing an end of the world situation, but no. The Suicide Squad intro of all the bad guy robots with Megatron, where they just list off five bad guys and they're like, oh, this guy was armed robbery, but he didn't take any of the money. Okay, you can have him. This guy killed three people. No, you can't have him. I want him. Okay, we'll put an ankle bracelet on him. Like, there's so many moments in this movie where I, like, literally just eye-rolled at the stupidity of the scenes. It's shocking.
Yeah.
But then there's a slight, small little ray of hope in Isabella Moner, who plays Isabella with a Z, where the intro with her and the robot Canopy, I was actually interested in. And like all the little kids, I was like, this is kind of fun. This is cool. And when that robot actually died and you saw her crying, I was like, okay, there's a little bit of heart in this movie. And then she literally disappears for an hour of the movie.
Gotta get more Marky Mark.
And then
Mark,
just shows
man.
Up out of nowhere.
Gotta get that Marky Mark.
Gotta get more Marky Mark. But she and Anthony Hopkins are by far the best parts of this movie, and they are so underused.
Yeah, she was good. I mean, like you said, a very dim light in a black hole, but hey.
Yeah. What format did you see this movie in? Did you see it just in like normal 30, like digital projection?
Yeah.
Okay. How many times did the aspect ratio change on your
screen?
Dude,
so many times.
I have never noticed aspect ratio changes like this movie.
It was driving me nuts.
The end of the movie, it probably changes once, like every other shot is in a new aspect ratio.
It was horrible.
And for those of you guys who don't know, aspect ratio is the size of width to height. So if you notice, the film gets taller, and that's because they shot it with IMAX cameras, and so they're working those shots in, which are going to have greater detail and better resolution, but the way that they mix with a normal camera makes it to look to where the screen is expanding every single time an IMAX shot comes in. I mean, there are films that were shot with IMAX cameras, and I don't remember scene changes like this. Like, I know Force Awakens was shot with an IMAX camera.
Well, generally, the way they do it is they shoot the entire scene in IMAX. So, like, a fight starts and every cut is in IMAX until the fight is over. I've never seen it done like this, and I hated it.
Yeah, it was so distracting from the rest of the movie. It was, like, especially at the end of the movie when you want to be sucked into what's going on screen. It's so hard when you just are constantly, like, being distracted by the top third of the screen flickering from IMAX to normal 35 millimeter.
Well, I think, so this actually kind of gets to the only point that I have to make about this film is the reason it's, like, constantly switching back and forth. The reason it's constantly switching back and forth is because the whole thing is like constant action scenes. Like, the worst part about Michael Bay and this movie specifically, but kind of Michael Bay in general, is his lack of dynamics. Like, there are so many reasons why the greatest scenes in cinema history are so great. But one thing that people don't really talk about that much is the context in which that scene fits in the movie and the dynamics of the film, like leading up to that scene and coming out of that scene. A film's pacing and editing, it's like music, you know, you have to have crescendos and decrescendos and all this stuff. And this movie is like looping the bass drop of a Skrillex song for 2.5 hours. Like, I was exhausted when I left this movie.
Yeah, that's one way to describe this movie. I mean, there is music in this movie, if you remember. Cogman sings during the big exposition scenes of this movie, and Anthony Hopkins tells him to stop.
I actually laughed during that part. That was funny.
Did you really?
Yeah.
My theater ate that scene up. They were loving it.
I chuckled only at, like, the robot part, because it was, like, the only thing where I was like, ha. Huh. That was the extent of my laughing. Like,
but that's such weird, like, that, if that movie is in a comedy, or that, if that type of comedy is in a actual full on comedy film, I'm all for it. But it feels so out of place here. And it literally feels like during reshoots, they were like, wait, people didn't like the serious nature of Batman vs. Superman? Okay, let's work in a couple pieces of comedy. We have these scenes where we have this huge opera music playing, so why don't we just make it look like Cogman, who's a transformer that never actually transforms, be singing opera.
Yeah. And that's like dynamics. Again, it's this crescendo moment that it's like, oh, nope, actually, here's this thing instead.
Yeah.
It's just...
he undercuts himself so many times.
Yeah. This movie is... have you ever seen Spinal Tap?
Not in a long time. Not since college.
Well, this movie goes to 11. It's just constantly at 11.
There
this
we
movie
go.
Is always at 11. And you need the build before you can have... the big bass drop, I guess, to stick with the Transformers theme. And this is just bass dropping constantly.
I will say, so we have a friend named Chris Ramirez, who I hope to have on the podcast someday. He's a fantastic actor. And there was one time we went to go see him in a play, and he has a moment where he yells on stage, but then he has this even bigger yell later on screen, or not on screen, on stage. And I remember asking him about that, and he said, I didn't want to use my, you know, I wanted to yell, but I wanted to save my big yell for that end moment where, you know, you see where you need that weight at the end of the scene. And I thought that was such a brilliant thing. And that's one of those things that's just kind of stuck with me. And this movie is a perfect example of the reverse of that, in that their best moments are front loaded. And the rest of the movie is like a lower, I mean, it's lower in every single way. It's lower in quality. It's lower in stakes. I mean, legitimately, I was sad when Canopy died at the beginning of the movie. And throughout the rest of the movie, like when Bumblebee, who's a character that we should love, is about to die, or he doesn't actually die, spoiler, but he doesn't actually die. But when he's, you know, there's that scene where you feel like Prime is about to kill him. I literally felt nothing. I was like, okay. Well, this might happen.
Yeah.
And it's such a, I don't know if like study is the right word, but I think it's an interesting way in how there's emotion built on this character that they probably don't even intend us to have an attachment to early on in the movie. Yet the characters at the end of the movie that we should be most tied to, we literally could care less about the future of that.
Yeah, I think it's just because, like, what we've seen the world almost get destroyed 4 times now, and no main characters have died. So,
yeah.
Like, there's no stakes.
Yeah. So, I mean, that goes back to my part of what I think there's a film in here that's a better film. And it is a very small portion, but I think that opening scene, like imagine a movie simply set in the wasteland of Chicago between, you could even not make it Canopy. You could make it Bumblebee and Isabella, set in the wasteland of Chicago where they're being hunted down and Bumblebee's trying to help her. Like imagine a smaller, more personal film. You have one Autobot. You don't have any other robots other than the US government ones that are trying to hunt them down because Transformers are illegal, and you have Isabella, and that's the entire movie. That movie sounds so interesting to me.
Yeah.
I am like, I'll go see that movie. And that's what I hope they're making a Bumblebee movie that's supposed to come out next year. Travis Knight, son of Phil Knight of Nike, is directing it.
Hmm.
He did Kubo and the Two Strings last year.
Yeah. That'll be interesting.
So that movie's supposed to come out next summer. I really hope they go smaller, more personal with it. I really think getting this out of the hands of Michael Bay and big explosions and giving it to directors that have a touch. Like imagine a Gareth Edwards directing one of these movies, like where he has that scale of Godzilla, but with these characters. And I realize I say that when he's, you know, Godzilla is not the most human film of all time. But the way that he deals with scale is so fascinating that I think just switching this series up with a new director, nobody other than Michael Bay has ever directed a Transformers movie.
Yeah.
And so I think switching it up and giving it fresh life is something the series desperately needs.
I agree. And I mean, he said he was done like 3 movies ago. So just be done, dude. But
And then Marky Mark comes out and says, no way he's done. This is his baby.
Yeah. Well, I agree with your point on the other directors, especially Gareth Edwards. Like, the reason Godzilla isn't a perfect film, but in terms of like scale and monster movie, it's pretty great. And because it's a human story, like it's a human story in a Godzilla situation where these have just constantly just been like a Transformers and military and Cade Yeager story. Like, it's super unrelatable. Nobody cares.
I love that name so much. Like, never, I don't know if I can think of another, like, outside of like the big, like Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Samwise Gamgee. Like, that's such a great character name that I hate that it's wasted in a movie like this.
I know. It's so fits who Mark Wahlberg is in the movie, of just like douchebag bro. Like,
I want to know what Mark Wahlberg's doing. Like, he has the capability to do amazing performances, but then like he throws out things like this that I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you have things like The Fighter, or I know it's not everybody's favorite, but he's great in Lone Survivor.
He's super funny in Ted and stuff, which is like not a great movie, but his performance is really funny.
The other guys?
Yeah, like really, I think he's getting those checks, and you know, these movies are probably pretty fun to make. Like, you're running around with explosions and jumping around and like hanging around on set, and then most of the work is done in post and you get a fat check at the end. So I don't know.
I will say Marky Mark does, like, when you think about the fact that he's having to act against nothing, like in that scene where he's in the junkyard and he's talking to Transformers the entire time, he's literally acting and having a dialogue with nothing. And he seems to be doing a pretty decent job. So as far as the things that are wrong with this movie, Marky Mark is not even close to the bottom.
True.
That's, unless you have anything else, the only other thing I can think of is the weird talisman scene. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, I have nothing else to say.
If you do see this movie, just be on the lookout for a really weird scene with the talisman.
Imagine what you will, I don't even know that description.
I don't even know like how to phrase it in an appropriate way. That's the thing, is like, this is supposed to be a kid's movie, yet it's so overly sexualized, and the jokes that are made are like just so awkward in like this setting. It's just like, I don't, who's this movie for? Like, I keep thinking that, who's this movie for? Like, there's no way I would take my son, if he was old enough to see movies like this, to see this movie because of some of the jokes. Like, but at the same time, like, I don't know adults who, like, who's this for? Who's watching this? Who's their market?
That's the question, man. Like, there's no tone to this film. There's no target audience. There's no dynamics. I think it's just one of those movies.
I will say the hope is that
I just hope anyone will see it.
Yeah, I will say the interesting thing is that this movie opened up to about half of whatever the other movies have opened up. This movie made $68 million, and it's made $68 million so far. It opened on Wednesday of last week.
Because they're
horrible. Most of the other movies, like, made over.
There's no surprise. Yeah. We're five in.
Well, I know, but at the same time, like, the other movies have all made over $100 million on opening weekend.
Yeah.
So for this one to underperform, like, I mean, it's already made its money back overseas. It's done, what is it? So far it's done $267 million on a $217 million budget.
Come on, China.
I mean, the movie's going to make its money back. The movie's going to make its money back just fine. The series will keep going. They have ideas supposedly for the next 12 years.
Oh,
whether or not we ever do a podcast on one again is interesting.
Yeah, we're done. We're done.
I don't know where to go from this. Let's just rate it and get out. Jake, what would you give this film?
Well, I mean, if you are just like super into nonsense and just feeling like you were like physically abused when you left the theater, this movie is for you. Let me tell you, guys. But I'm not that target audience. This is an F. This is an F minus. I hated this movie, and it was so long. Just stop it. It's it needs to die. I'm so over it. And I bet, like, one thing you could do is count how many times Optimus Prime says, "I'm Optimus Prime," and, like, turn that into a drinking game or something. I don't know. maybe that's who this movie's for.
I don't even think this movie's for those people, in all fairness. Okay, so it was, what, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I gave Pirates of the Caribbean an F. And I fully think that film deserves that. But I think this film is, I think Transformers is worse than Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, if I had to watch Pirates of the Caribbean again, or this again, I'll watch Pirates of the Caribbean for 24 hours straight before I ever watch this movie again. If we're going on the letter scale, it's a Z. It's the end of the alphabet. It's as bad as it can
get. That's good.
Like, I think I literally came home and said to my wife, that may be the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
It was bad.
I don't know a movie I've ever been so bored with. Like, even bad movies, there's entertaining parts that it's like, okay, this isn't great, but somewhat entertaining. There's nothing about this movie that I was even remotely entertained about. And that, like, these movies should be so easy. Like, there is no reason these movies shouldn't be killing it. And yet they tank every single time.
Critically, but yes.
Yeah. Well, critically, yeah, they tank critically every single time. I mean, even I'm curious if I look on Rotten Tomatoes what critic scores for, or I mean, like, what audience scores for this would be. I can't imagine that they're huge.
It's like 40%, I think, which...
Serious? I mean, so yeah, even audiences don't love it.
Yeah.
Which, once again, who's seeing this film?
We are, unfortunately.
We are. Tons of critics are just paying for it.
Yeah.
It comes out 10 years from now that Paramount was just fudging the numbers a little bit and, like, really only, like, they only sold $1 million worth of tickets every single film.
That would be great, because then they'd all go to prison and they'd have to stop making these.
No, Michael Bay would figure out how to work out.
That's true.
I mean, he would. He made The Rock.
True. That's
so.
That's, yeah.
I think he knows how to break out of prison.
Oh man.
Alrighty. So let's get to weekly recommends. Jake, what's your content of the week for this week?
Mine is the Lego Batman movie. Watched it last night for the first time and absolutely loved it. It is so fun. I love what they do with the character. You know, Batman has been on the screen a lot in the past 30 years, and they actually address that, which I loved. But it's a totally new take on the character. Perfectly cast. Just really, really fun. If you liked the Lego movie... if you liked the Lego movie and if you like Batman, I mean, this movie is for you. And it is a great palate cleanser after the poop burger of Transformers 5. Cameron.
New way to review films. This was a poop burger. yeah. Gosh, that movie's so good. How do they, like... There's no reason that the Lego movie should be good, yet both of them have been great so far.
So true.
They're just doing such good things. All right, my recommend for content of the week has to do with the fact that Baby Driver is coming out on Wednesday.
Yes.
And I think that Edgar Wright is one of the most underappreciated directors working nowadays.
Agreed.
Between Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, World's End, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. I mean, all four of those movies are some of, like, they're all amazing. Hot Fuzz is in my top 10 favorite movies of all time, and you could easily, like, throw Shaun of the Dead in there. World's End is still fun. It's not as good as the other two, but it's still pretty great. And Scott Pilgrim is a fantastic, like, if I'm putting together a list of the most underrated movies of all time, Scott Pilgrim is in the top 3 on that list. I mean, that movie is so stinking good. Every single bit of that movie just is entertaining, fun. It's whimsical, that it has stakes. Like, that movie is just so good. And Edgar Wright, like, the way that he directs movies is just fantastic. His style is so good. And I just can't wait to see what he does with Baby Driver. I think he's going to knock it out of the park. And as of this recording, it has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes and is just killing it. So I think it's safe to say, I note what we will be reviewing next week. We'll be reviewing Baby Driver. And I think after the bad start this summer has gotten off to, there's some hope coming up in the fact that we have not only Baby Driver, but Spider-Man Homecoming has been getting good reviews. War for the Planet of the Apes has been called the best of the trilogy so far. And then there's other small films like The Big Sick, which came out this weekend in LA and New York, and will be coming out mid-July in the rest of this, or in our area of Dallas. So I think there's a lot of hope coming up in movies, and I'm excited to see what all's out there, starting with Edgar Wright's Baby Driver coming out next week.
Wait, so we're not doing Despicable Me 3?
I knew I would get some fight from you on that one, Jake.
Well, I mean, like, I have my Minions tattoo back piece. Like, this is my life.
Is it like Steve-O's thumbs up tattoo, but it's a Minions one on your back?
Hey, don't patronize me. Minions for life.
Let me ask you this. How much would it cost? Like, if I was to pay for it, I'll pay for the tattoo. How much would it cost for you to get a Minions tattoo?
How big and where?
Somewhere that could be seen if you're wearing a swimsuit.
Okay.
And it has to be at least 1 inch by 1 inch.
Could it be like a creative interpretation of a minion? Or does it have to be a minion?
No, it's got to be like a minion. It's got to be a minion.
Ooh. It would have to be a lot of money.
Like, give me a ballpark. I want to know if, like, I start a GoFundMe page tomorrow, how much do we need to raise?
Oh, the internet is a powerful thing, my friend. Oh, this is a dangerous game you're playing.
I know. Give me a number.
To be safe, 500 million.
500? Oh, come on. You're telling me that for $10,000, you wouldn't get a minion tattoo on your lower back?
No.
You're serious?
Yeah. I'll just go.
Who's going to...
On my lower back?
Yeah, like a tramp stamp of a minion tattoo.
No way.
You're kidding me.
No.
For $10,000...
I'll just do a couple freelance jobs and my back will be fine. Thank you.
For $10,000, okay. Now I see where you're going with this.
Okay.
As soon as
Let's
I started saying
game.
That, I'm like...
Let's play this game, my friend.
I mean... If we got like 1,000 listeners on this episode, I would do it.
Wow. Oh, man. You have just unleashed the Twitter gods. Oh, man. You said it. It's been recorded. 1,000 listens.
It's been recorded.
That is easy.
Please cut that out as you edit this episode.
This is happening. 1,000 listens is
easy. I have a son.
It's going down.
No. All right. No.
In a week, you will have a minion tattoo
this.
On your back.
Okay. I regret this.
I'm
regret
Jake
this
Brown.
So
you can
much.
Find me at jakebrown.tv. Cameron, what about you?
My name is Cameron Slanina. You can find me at 321CamiTime on Twitter and Instagram. This is Popcorn Optional. You can find us online at popcornoptional.com. If you like us and you've enjoyed listening to us tonight, please go to iTunes, give us 5 stars, and recommend us to a friend. We would love to keep being able to do this, and we would love to grow our audience. You can find more of our episodes.
1,000 listens on this episode. Specifically.
Specifically, I hope that this gets like 900 listens. That'd be amazing. That'd be so great. It stops right there. That's that. And until next week, we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.